Mr. Hipperson, Reel 6. Now, one thing, we missed out it chronologically, but you mentioned while we were just having a break about the Royal Norfolk Regiment Association. Now, can you tell that story on tape about what happened when you first arrived and met the Norfolks?
Well, when we first met the Norfolks, I can't remember who's there, probably a couple of sergeants or a sergeant and a sergeant major or something. And they said, you know, who was going to what unit in Korea. And they also gave us a little talk about the Royal Norfolk Regiment and Association. And they said to us, well, if we paid £1, then that would cover us for a life membership association. They were going to pay us £1 wages anyway. So what they said was, for those of you, if you want to join, and then if you get wounded here and get disabled, you can have a regimental, one of the regimental houses in Norwich, etc., etc. So as we got paid, they asked if you want to join, and if you did, which most of us did, I think all of us did, they gave you £1 and you signed for £2, the other £1 was for your membership to the Royal Norfolk Association. But I never ever did get my membership, and even after trying on numerous occasions, I was never anywhere long enough for it to be sorted out. And even at TA camps I tried, but we never got anywhere, so we never did get it. And I also...
This wasn't a con, though, this was just incompetence, or was it a con?
Well, it was a con, because we were all the same. I met up with one or two other chaps, again later, who were there when we were at TA camps and things, and said to them, did you ever get your membership? And none of us ever did.
So, the sergeant,
so somebody, if that was a mistake, the British Army owe me £1. But
you think it was just pocketed?
I think that was a con, when it, you know, I think that was one of these cons. They done quite well, actually. It must have made £20 that day. It was quite a lot of money then.
Now, we were talking about sort of conditions on this knoll. I wondered, how did you react to the shell fire and the mortar? I mean, yourself. I mean, what would you do when the fire was on? Would you be in your bunker, or would you be...
Well, it depends where you were. I mean, if you're in the bunker, you stayed in the bunker, obviously. If you're out in the open, you hit the ground and try to make for a bit of cover. And you sort of adapt to it, really. You don't like it, you know. I mean, I'm not saying that I liked it or thought it was great or anything silly like that, but you're obviously a bit nervous, but and
did it get easier or worse as you were in the Moor Shellfire? Well, it wasn't for a long time, really, you know.
That didn't get any worse, really. I mean, that weren't too many years before that, when I was a kid in the Blitz, and, you know, so I had experienced that type of thing before. You know, when the house next door got knocked down, and several where I lived, you know, it was frightening, certainly, but I weren't particularly frightened.
Which bothered you most, shellfire or mortar fire, or was it
much of a muchness? I mean, all you heard was a whistle and you hit the ground. And I don't care what it was, because the end result could be the same.
Were there any cases of shell shock in your unit, or what they call shell shock in the first world? I don't know what they called it then, though.
I didn't really. They weren't such a thing when I was in the army. They'd done away with shell shock. It wasn't allowed. We had one chap in our unit I felt a bit afraid for. He'd been ambushed a couple of times on patrol, and he was very nervous, you know, when he used to stand guard and things. He was very, very frightened, and I didn't really think he should have been there, you know. I thought he probably today he'd have gone back somewhere. He'd been in a couple of bad ambushes on patrol, been in Korea a lot longer than I had, a lot longer, but his nerves were a bit shot, you know. And I would say,
how did it show it? I mean, was he...
Well, he's just nervous. He was afraid, and he, you know, you see the girl he was.
But he wasn't allowed back or sent home or
anything? No. You weren't allowed. That didn't happen in them. When I was in the Abbey, you weren't allowed to get like that. But you do get afraid, and obviously, and but also everything else. You, I don't know how you sort of adapt to live with it, but you do, and you do live with it, and you live with it. Was I know the first when we first went there, the first boy who was with us, he went in one of the I believe in C Company, I believe, and we'd only been there 2 days, and someone say Mickey Flynn is dead, and I thought, you know, that was a bit of a shock. He joined up same time as I had, and all the rest of it, and we'd been together most of the time. And but you do get used to it, and then you hear about people and patrols, and you think, oh, thank God it wasn't me, you know, I won't on that one.
Now, well, after you'd sort of had the stand too, what would you be doing? You know, it's a long day.
Well, you'd
have your breakfast. You said that. Sorry.
Yeah, you'd have your breakfast, obviously.
Where would you go? You'd go back for that, or would it come up to you?
No, it would come up to us. That'd be cooked where we were, not far. You'd walk maybe a couple hundred yards, 100 yards, so, and you'd have your breakfast, and then. Sometimes we'd be working round in the position.
Now, what would you be doing? Improving the position.
Improving the position.
Now, how would you do that?
Well, maybe improving the wiring or the
during the day.
Yeah, during the day. Well, if you're in the right position, if you weren't in view of the enemy, when we was in a forward position like that, and you do some weapon cleaning, obviously, and that sort of thing.
Tell us a bit more before the improvements. So, what would you do? You know,
well,
what might be wrong with your positioning?
Well, maybe the wire had been, all needed doing. That had been maybe trampled down and things like that. We didn't really do a lot of that sort of work whilst we was on that knoll. You know, I mean, that was mainly. Like ordinary infantry soldiers, just sort of looking after the position, keeping it clean, and looking after the weapons. And
what weapon maintenance would you have to do?
Well, you'd obviously do the cleaning. You'd clean the weapons. The weapons all had to be cleaned regularly, didn't they? And oiled and all that sort of thing. Magazines filled up and all that type of thing, really. You know, hand grenades primed and. And it weren't too bad. We sort of worked too hard during the day, but they always kept us busy doing something or the other.
What about the
military? And you'd have a sleep when you could, because you only sleep in a few hours, and some days not at all. So, and then you'd have your turn on stand too, and front of the position, looking out over the valley into the hills where the Chinese were.
So you'd sleep when you could?
You slept when you could.
Would you go into your bunker normally? Or would
just you lay on the bunker. Just lay on the bunker and sleep. You won't take your clothes off. Just lay on top of the bunker. In the bunker and lay on top of your bed. And sleep whenever you could, really. If you had an hour, you're going to have a sleep because you were that tired, you needed it.
What about the latrines? What were they like? And where were they?
Oh, they weren't far away. I would just sort of holes in the ground type thing, really. That type of thing.
Did they supply paper and the rest of it?
There was paper and that sort of thing, but it was just a hole in the ground with a stick to sit on. Nothing very elaborate.
Was there sort of a regular routine of filling the holes in, digging
the wood? Yeah, and then moving them on. That was another job that had to be done. You see, just for your normal use. And then we'd... had a bath, a place I think, did I mention that before? We went off after about 2 weeks, I think, and that is sort of two at a time. You went off and it was, they took you in a jeep to a bathhouse about 4 miles back.
Now, was it actually a house or was it a mobile?
No, that was a mobile.
What was it like? Describe it for us.
Well, we think, oh, that was an American thing. I think it was. And there was these baths you went in and you took your clothes off, and remembering that you'd been wearing the same clothes for a week. And you took your clothes off and got in the bath and put some clean clothes on. That was when we went in there, when somebody said, yeah, it smelled dead men. And that was, it smelled dead people. And that was the smell on our clothes from that position. As the days were getting hotter, the corpses in the front positions were sold out after the winter and just lay there, or went and frozen, and then they were thawed out, and then of course the whole place was just smell of dead bodies, and that smell actually clung to our clothing. And that weren't until we went somewhere we were right away from it before anybody noticed that we smelled
What kind of a smell? I know it's almost impossible to describe.
You can't describe it. I don't know. You can't. It's just a dead smell in it. You know, I can smell it now. What I mean is I can remember the smell, but I can't explain it.
It was a horrible smell.
Oh, really? Yeah, that is nasty. That is a nasty smell.
Did you try and cover them up?
So what we did was, when these bodies sat and thawed out, we went to try and move them, but they opened fire on us, so we had to pack that in. So what we used to do is we used to go out at night with sandbags with soil in them and put this out and just put the soil over the top of the bodies. So we covered the bodies with soil to keep the smell. So what we could do with them. You know, they were also, that was in a, their bodies also laid in a spent minefield where they were still anti-personnel mines, which hadn't been alright, that had been used, people had been through it. But there were still mines which were unexploded there, so you weren't going to just wander about there at night trying to find these bodies in the dark, under the cover of dark. So that was the only thing we could do. We used to crawl out and then cover them up with soil, try and keep the smell down.
Did you try and clear the minefield, or if not clear it, then you
just mark the edges? No, we knew a path. We had a path through it, minefield. We used to go out to the listening post at night. There was a path through there, and
were the edges marked?
Pardon?
The edges of the minefield or the path, were they marked?
Not really. I mean, there was some markers on them, because all minefields should be marked with markers. And, I mean, we were taught, when I went on the Salt Pioneer course, they talked about mine, and you mark them with the red triangles. But you see, they'd been vehicles through them, and a lot of Chinese and Americans through them. And
was it a British or American minefield, or was it formerly a Korean or Chinese?
No, it was, I should think it was initially United Nations minefield. I don't think that was there. So we had about 3 weeks. That was pretty lousy opposition, you know.
Funny you mentioned lousy. I was just going to ask, was there any problem with lice or fleas or any creepy crawlies?
You did, didn't you? I mean, that got to the point as the summer got on. The bunkers were rats. There was a lot of rats in them too.
Rats?
Yeah, as well. I mean, you used to lay in bed at night and they'd be running about, because on the roofs of the bunkers were little trees we chopped down and then covered with sandbags. And the rats would run about in there for warmth. But you did get quite a lot of lice. You're probably not conscious of it, but I remember when I got wounded, they soon found them.
Was there anything you did you could do about them? You know, they used to be chatting and, you know, chasing
mice.
Yeah,
I never noticed them that much, to be honest with you.
It was only afterwards.
Yeah.
Any other creepy crawlies or snakes or anything?
Yeah, there's a few snakes crawling about. Not too many. There's a few snakes and that type of thing. You know, nothing too bad. There's a few bits and pieces.
So it was mainly the rats that bothered you?
Well, and it didn't bother us too much, but there was rats there. Over there, and someone said that I saw a rat crawling across me about 6 inches from my nose. And it was you slept on the top bunk, but nobody seemed to get too excited about
him. Now, you weren't doing any duties as sort of assault pioneers. You were just infantry at this time.
At this time, yeah, at that particular time, we were mainly infantry.
Did you see much of Wormald in the trenches? I mean, was he good in the trenches? Or Bell, or the sergeant?
Sergeant Bell. Wormald was okay. You'd see him about. But I was trying to think whether he was with us up there, because I don't know whether the whole platoon. He must have been.
The book seems to think he was, but the book's not always accurate. You know?
No. Well, I think he was up there. He was all right. But,
he wasn't nervous.
No, he was all right. Holding a bow weren't too good, but he was all right. Sergeant Wormald was okay. The corporals were fine. Both the corporals we had and were fine. They used to cover for Bell. And
Bell did have more trouble with his nerves than Sergeant.
Yeah, poor chap. And we were there, and then we went to this...
How long were you on the Knoll?
For about 3 weeks, I think. About 3 weeks, I think, we were on there. And
anything happened, any incidents, you remember?
Well, as I said, there was a lot of shelling or mortar fire most of the time, and... That was almost continuous. I know what I was saying earlier, I went about Bath, and on the way back, we used to come along a little road what was open to enemy view to get back up there. And me and old Barney, we got halfway along, and they started shelling us, and we jumped straight in the bloody ditch. We just had a first bath for about a fortnight and clean clothes on. And straight into a ditch on the side of the road, soaking wet again and filthy dirty. And then crawled along and eventually got out of it. But there was one of the patrols, one of the listening posts, it was a few of them got wounded one night when there was a bit of trouble out the end there with the Chinese patrol out on that listening post. But that was always very nervy because you were open to the fire all the time. That was a bad position. So I think that's probably the worst we were in whilst I was there. Then we moved out of that position and went back. But we were still in the front line, but went to another position. What weren't?
Whereabouts in relation to L355?
Well, that was still the same side of 355, but further away from it, from 355.
So further back up it?
Well, no, to the side of it, really. Not behind it, but it was the side of 355. We were at the side of 355. I know, as we stood in our position, you looked out to your left and you could see 355. And we then moved to that position, and where we were doing more assault pioneer work, you know.
What was that? You were back to your proper duties in the sense.
Well, at that time, but also we still used to do a lot of patrols at night.
Now, you haven't mentioned patrols before. Do you mean listening patrols? Or
no, just all sorts of patrols. While we were in that position, I suppose I must have gone on about half a dozen different patrols. And
So this would be from the back end of April into May.
Yeah, from April. And we'd been on three or four patrol, and maybe more, I can't remember. But we were...
Now, can you describe what a typical patrol would be like? I know it's difficult to describe anyone, but how would you organise it? How would it be organised?
Well, first of all, you'd be told by the sergeant or the officer that you're on patrol that night, and so you sort of rested up if you had a chance for a couple of hours in the afternoon, and then in the evening you'd black out, and they'd instruct you and tell you what patrol and where you were going and what you were supposed to do, and you'd move off out just after dark as a rule to go where you were going, and very often we didn't see anything. We'd go for various reasons, because there'd been activity in that area in no man's land and that sort of thing.
Now, how many would there be on the typical patrol?
About a dozen, I suppose. About a dozen of you.
And who would take you? Wormald or Dingabell or something?
Wormald would take us, or one of the corporals. I've been out with the corporal, and we'd move off out and have a hunt round, and what we were supposed to do, and come back.
And did you ever find anything? This is going into the valley in front of Hill 355, would it be?
Yeah. I mean, we found very little, really. I mean, you know, they were out there and that was all happening, and I mean, you know, by day we were watching the bombing airstrikes by the Australian Air Force and all that sort of thing on enemy positions, which we used to have a grandstand view of that, and all sorts of different things. And then we'd come home to go out, and because we did arm a lot on the last patrol, we saw one or two bits and pieces of skirmish, but nothing very...
I'll come back to the last patrol, because obviously we're going to do quite a big thing on that. So that's the patrol where you were wounded and Wormald was killed. But you'd been out several times beforehand.
Yeah.
But they'd been mostly...
Mostly quiet.
How far would you go out on average?
Well, you'd go out maybe to the foothills of the enemy positions, you know.
So that's... basically across the valley towards Hill 227,
in that direction, in that area.
But you wouldn't start climbing it?
Not normally.
I think you did on the patrol that we're going to talk about later, but not normally.
We'd been on two or three patrols where they said they'd been enemy movement during the night, and the intelligence had said it, and that type of thing. And when we got there, we couldn't find them, or there was no one about, and we'd come back. And
how far would you go?
You'd go out almost to the bottom of the hill, really.
Which is?
Normally, depending.
About a mile, or?
Yeah, I mean, they were only about a mile between the two positions, so...
So less than a mile, normally.
Yeah, about three quarters of a mile. So there was a mile between the two positions, you go out for... half mile, three quarters of a mile, something.
But these
like
weren't the 12. These weren't particularly fighting patrols. They were just reconnaissance patrols.
Reconnaissance patrols, most of them. Yeah.
One thing I should have asked you is: these new positions on the side of Hill 355, did they differ in any way from the positions on the knoll? I mean, because you weren't with the Welsh Regiment anymore.
No. We then went back.
What were the positions like?
Well, when we moved from the Knoll,
they
were very similar, really. We had bunkers and things to sleep in, and trenches out the front, and all that sort of stuff. But we weren't in a position of where you were going to get fired at all the time. There was the occasional shell fire, but nothing like it was on the other one.
Were you protected by the shape of the ground?
Yeah, the ground itself, if you can imagine. We were that's hard to explain, but and that's hard for me to remember, really. I'm going back 50 years, and it's you know, partly by the terrain and the actual layout of the hill formations and things, and you were partly protected there. That weren't a bad position to be in. You were in the front line, just the same. That's possible you could get a frontal attack, you know. So that still had to be for sentries, and you still had to be up front. But you used to get the occasional shell and things that'd come over, but not to the extent there was when we were on that knoll, where that was every day. It was going to be sometime during the day they were going to have a little go at us, you know.
Did you have sort of pre-prepared fire zones, defensive fire plans and things like that?
Well, we used to have, yeah, we had trenches which you were designated to go and get in, you know, if anything happened and that type of thing. So we'd have 10 men getting in, one trying to get in one trench, and some poor devil on his own about 50 yards away was on his own, you know. You had positions to go into. And, you know, you went and jumped in them positions as anything happened. And,
but would sort of things like brand gunners...
But you'd still stand to at night. And
no, what I mean is, would you have sort of prepared fire plans?
Yeah, like, Well, not fire plans particularly. I mean, you had the brand gunners would set up in wherever the officer decided to, you know, put them, what position to put them in. Because although being in the assault pioneers, we were more of a working platoon, but we were still infantrymen as well. And as well as being like a working platoon, we still had to sort of, not, maybe not quite as much as the rifle companies, but we, you know, we still had to do our fair share.
Were you aware of sort of like the machine gun and heavy weapon covering fire and artillery plans behind you to cover you if there was a Chinese attack?
I mean, the thing was, especially when you're on patrol, they tell you what backup you had, what cover fire you had, whether the artillery would be following you, you know, and following your position and moving on to the next position, you know. So you knew that was there, and you know, that wasn't too bad that way. You had a pretty good idea of what was going on around you. But,